This is the Retirement Success Blueprint with Michael Stewart of Crystal Lake Tax. And we'd like to humbly let you know that Michael Stewart was recently selected by Wealth and Finance Magazine for Best Retirement Planning in Illinois for 2023. Plus, Crystal Lake Tax was recently chosen by Inc. Magazine for the Inc. 5000 as one of America's fastest-growing private companies. We're honored and proud. Now, here's today's Retirement Success Blueprint with Michael Stewart.
Welcome to the Retirement Success Blueprint with Michael Stewart, powered by the Retirement Income Source. Michael is the founder of Crystal Lake Tax and Financial. Michael is the author of the Amazon book, Purpose-Based Investing, 9 Lessons to Rescue Your Retirement from Wall Street. So let's head over to the drafting table and get this episode of the Retirement Success Blueprint started.
Welcome to the Retirement Success Blueprint. This is your host, Michael Stewart, fiduciary financial planner with Crystal Lake Tax and Financial. Today, we are going to be talking about the 10 questions that should be asked or discussed between you and your advisor. Now, there are 6 questions to ask your advisor, 4 questions that the advisor should already be asking you. So, total of 10 questions. We're going to talk about all 10 on today's show. And I think that one of the most major parts that I think any advisor should be doing, and it's really true with any relationship, if you're thinking about it, the most important part in any relationship is not talking, but listening. I've always thought one of the main jobs for the advisor in that very first meeting, we call ours a fit meeting. Are we a fit for you? Are you a fit for us? When he or she's looking at bringing you on is to listen to you. Unfortunately, it's the one thing that we do the least of, isn't it? And that's not just true with this situation. It's true with life in general. You heard the old saying go that God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. Unfortunately, we try to use them in an opposite way that they should have been proportioned to us. In that process, you got to know what to ask. So I was interviewing for a position in our company that I'd never done the job before. So for years, almost every job in the company I had done at some point in my career. So I knew how to interview for it. This particular job, I didn't ever do, and I don't know how to do. So if the person told me they were doing a good job or bad job, how am I going to know what's good and what's bad? I didn't have a benchmark since I hadn't done it. And that's the way I feel most people get into a situation where they go, they interview an advisor, but they don't really know what to ask. So that's like, so can you give me some references? That's where people default to. And I'm not going to say that's not a good thing. I've been asked for that many times. I think people ask that because they just don't know what to ask. And it's the most obvious thing. So think about it for a minute. Have you ever seen somebody put the name of someone else they're going to use as a reference on a resume that was going to talk bad about them ever in the history of references? Matter of fact, I just got to the point where I don't even really care about references anymore. I mean, they're going to give you somebody that's their favorite client, somebody that they know likes them. Heck, I'd venture to say if you research Bernie Madoff, he probably had his 3 favorite clients that liked Bernie before he went to jail. So I wonder sometimes if that's even a question. But again, I think it's because people don't know what to ask. So I'm going to give you 6 questions about that, as I said, and then 4 that maybe that advisor should already be asking you. So let's start with the first question. 6 questions. Number 1 is, what ways are you pivoting right now to take advantage of the current high interest rate environment? What have you done in your portfolios to pivot, to move, to take advantage of this? Unless you've been under a rock, unless you literally never turn on the news, unless you don't buy anything, you realize that we are in a high interest rate environment. Matter of fact, we're looking at being here for at least probably the next 18 months or so, you know, since you've been listening to the show. So we got plenty of time to take advantage of this. And I think everybody should have had some money in fixed income. I think maybe for 25, you should have some money in fixed income. If for no other reason is to have dry powder for when the market drops. See, dry powder here several months ago, literally not years, months ago, was at around 0%, right? Money in the bank a year ago earning nothing. Money in your brokerage account sitting there in cash earning nothing. Heck, you can make 5% on your dry powder right now. That isn't bad money. Point is, we've got an inverted yield curve, almost a certain deterioration in the market at some point in the future leading to a recession. And what's the advisor doing about that, right? You got 5% yields available risk-free right now in FDIC-insured CDs and treasuries. But guess what? A lot of advisors aren't paying attention to that. And I definitely have that as one of my questions. Now, I put this next one as 2, but it's not really a question. It's more of a point. Fees, our fees. Now, I'll tell you straight on the radio here. You look up my ADV. A lot of people ask us what our management fees are. We range anywhere from 0.75%, so that's 0.75%, to 1%, depending on the size of the account. Actually, it's pretty low for the industry. Most firms out there charge a 1.25%, 1.5%, plus the fees internally on the different funds, the mutual funds, ETFs that you own. So by the time you figure in all those investment fees on top of the advisory fees, it's not unusual for a lot of people to be over 2%. So we're at a flat 1% of the assets that we manage on the first 2 million. And then from 2 to 5 million, we charge 0.75. Over 5 million is 0.5%. So that's our fee structure, just in case anybody wants to know. But a lot of people ask about fees. So again, I've really thought this through, and I think people ask questions because they don't know what to ask. And that's kind of the whole reason I'm doing this show today. So you'll know what to ask, have a better time discussing these things with your current advisor or your future advisor. So on fees, I really wouldn't even go there. It's not because I'm trying to hide fees, for two reasons. Number one, before you even go in the office, just go on the website, take you right to the SEC's website, pull up their ADV, pull that up. It'll tell you exactly what their fee ranges are. You don't even need to go in and ask. Here's my point. This is an area that I see people get wrapped around the axle with. They'll choose a portfolio that doesn't fit them as well because it's lower cost than the one that fits them better. That's higher cost. Case in point right now. And I want to get down this rabbit hole on things that they call buffered ETFs, buffered exchange-traded funds. So buffered exchange-traded funds are expensive compared to their peers. They just are. I mean, they're all over 50 basis points, which for you non-investment people out there is over 0.5% internal fees. So if you've got buffered ETFs inside an advisory portfolio, you're not only paying the advisor 1.5%, but the buffered ETF is another 0.5% or more. But buffered ETFs, if the market goes sideways, anything at all, you'll make 12-15% return. If the market goes down, they'll raise 20% of the loss. So, I mean, they're a heck of a good deal. It's not a place you'd want to have all your money, but you got to realize all they do inside there, and you want to go into trading options and do these things that these ETFs do. So it can be a fantastic product, but once again, if you're only looking at fees, they can be expensive. But are you getting the bang for your buck? My point is, I don't think it's as big of an issue if it meets your needs. So I think that we've been programmed that way as consumers. Really, at the end of the day, I mean, if you went from an account number one to account number two, and the account number two ended up getting you $1,000 back a year that you weren't getting before, and talked to you about some things that you weren't deducting, but he cost you $200 more a year, but you were saving thousands of dollars a year, would you really care that it was $200 more? No, it's the value that you get from the advice, the real planning advice. So my point, I think, is that something we ask when it's not really a major point, but we like to think it is. So today we're talking about questions. So as a matter of fact, the title of today's show is the 10 questions that you should be discussing with your current advisor or a prospective advisor. So your advisor should actually be asking you 4 of these, and you should be asking 6 of them. So I'm going to recap them real quick, just in case you're just now tuning into the show. That's question number 1. What ways are you pivoting to take advantage of the current high interest rate environment while it's here? We haven't seen rates like this in over 15 years. Number 2, which is really not a question, it's more of a point, is that don't ask about fees. I don't know, you can do it if you want to. Really, you're not going to find advisors out there at 3 and 4%. I mean, heck, I think most advisors out there, all they can legally charge is 3%. And I see all kinds of people's stuff come through my office. I just don't see it. I think we get so wrapped up around that they've made decisions over 0.15%. I know if you take a 25-year-old and you take 0.15%, run it over 40 years, let me tell you, most people listening to this show aren't 25. Most people listening to the show are 50, 60, 70 years old, right? It's not going to make that big a difference as long as you're getting the portfolio that's right for you from a risk standpoint, income standpoint, a tax standpoint. Point number 3, I think it's probably of the 6 questions to ask your advisor, maybe the most important. You ready? Number 3. How do you create income in your portfolio? And you may have to define income. So I got $1 million. I want 40 grand a year. How are you going to create that 40 grand? And then just shut up and listen. That actually is a great question. Matter of fact, if you just wrote that one question down, now again, if you're 25 years old, you don't need to ask Vanguard that question, right? They don't create income. There's just an S&P 500 index portfolio or a portfolio of index portfolios. However, if you're 60, 65, 70, You're somebody who has to take required minimum distributions. You're somebody that needs to live off the income from their portfolio, and this money has to last up 20, 30 years. That is something you need to know, because I'm going to tell you this, and it's really back to question number one. What ways are you pivoting to take advantage of the current high interest rate environment? Listen, this is very, very important. We're in a whole new time frame. New sheriff in town hall here. Together, different market than we were in 18 months ago. If your advisor is selling shares to create income in today's environment, you've got a growth-based advisor. You got a stock market cheerleader, but you're living in an income-based world. Your world has changed, but he or she hasn't changed with it. There is no good reason you should have to sell shares in today's environment if you only need 4 or 5% plus of income off your portfolio, right? You can make 4.5%, 5.5% on a CD or a treasury right now. On bonds, you can get 5 to 6%. On preferred, you can get 6 to 7%. There's some real estate out there paying 7%. There's business development companies paying almost 10%. The point is, 18 months ago, 2 years ago, I could understand it. The interest rates are at 1.5%, 2% because the Fed had cut them down so low. Now, shoot, you can get bonds at 5, 6%. You can get things that are paying you well over that, and you don't have to take all the principal risk. More importantly, you don't have to sell parts of your investments to withdraw money out. So here's the example. Let's say you got $1 million and you say, Mike, I need $40,000 a year. We will position your portfolio, and everybody's going to be slightly different on how much is in the market, how much is not in the market, those kind of things. But let's just go with me for a minute here. We will position it so net of fees, you are getting that $40,000 in the form of interest and dividends off of your stocks, off of your fixed income, whatever the vehicles happen to be, right? They're going to be slightly different for everybody based on risk, age, all those kind of things. But we aren't going to have to sell a single share of anything, because we're just going to pay you out of the cash flow that your portfolio is already generating. And since you're going to have some market exposure, if the market continues to go up or when it goes up or down, it won't change your income because you're just spending the cash flow, the interest and dividends off of the investments. Unfortunately, here's how most advisors, this is big firms and little firms, how they're taking your money, right? If you say, hey, I need that same $40,000 of income, they'll say, hey, we're going to put you in a growth-oriented portfolio of mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, ETFs, those kind of things. And even though they only yield 1.5%, 2%, but you need 4%, don't worry, we'll still send you the $40,000. Well, if it's only generating $15,000 to $20,000 a year of income, where's the other $20,000 to $25,000 coming from? They have to gradually sell bits and pieces of your portfolio. They sell your principal. Now, at first, you may not notice. Why? Because in a market like this year, it's going up in value, right? So if everything's appreciating, they're just selling a certain amount of shares, sending you the money, and it all looks good because when you get your statement, hey, look, I still made money, even though I took money out. The problem is, the reason that is flawed is, what happens is when you are pulling money out and you are selling shares, you own less of those shares, which means that that's less income that they can generate because you own less principal. And when they roll over, you have to sell more shares to generate the same income. So one, that is why your income in retirement should be based on cash flow from your stock and bond portfolio, not from hope that the market goes up so you can sell shares along the way. Because when you get into a rough market, and folks, I think we're heading towards that, especially as we roll into spring and next year, you have to be very diligent to understand that if you're taking income from your portfolio, it needs to come in the form of interest and dividends. A second way advisors wrongly, in most instances, I believe, a little disclaimer there for compliance reasons, is that, oh, hey, don't worry, put your money in this insurance product, put your money in this annuity. Now, I am not pro or anti-annuity, but I'm not really a big fan of them when it comes to income. Now, most advisors out there will say, hey, don't worry about it. They give you lifetime income assurances, right? You buy this income rider. It'll, even if the balance goes to zero, it'll keep paying an income out like a pension. True. But most people that buy an income type of an annuity or an annuity, which is an insurance product with an income rider, don't realize that, yes, although that income stream is guaranteed as long as you live, within about the first 12 or 15 years, when you turn it on, you will spend through 100% of your principal. There will be no legacy left. There will be no access to that money. Yes, the insurance company is on the hook because of the fees you paid them to continue to send you whatever level of income they promised to. But the reality is you will blow through your principal. why not just be in something a little bit more traditional, a traditional stock and bond portfolio that the cash flow can generate a comparable level of income? So not only you get the level of income that you need, but you don't have to touch any of the principal in the process. Folks, that's why it's two ways that the entire investment community has got it wrong. You know, they always say, think about common sense. Well, unfortunately, in this industry, common sense is not always common practice. So if they're using exchange traded funds that they're selling in order to send you money, or you're saying, hey, this annuity has some sort of assurance or guarantee attached to it for my income, but every year you get a statement, it keeps going down in value because you're taking income out. Let's have a conversation about that, right? My analyst was telling me about this. You actually get an ETF at par, price, maturity, fixed income, right? So there's all these things that are out there. But the bottom line is that a lot of people don't understand how you actually generate income from your portfolio. And unfortunately, there's a lot in the industry, a lot of brokers, whether they've been a broker for 5, 10, 20 plus years, they're great at accumulating assets. They're not so great at distributing them when you need income in retirement. So the point of what I'm getting at here is if you can get fixed income, the problem, we've talked about this on other shows. You can go to our website, crystallaketax.com. You can listen to them. I've talked about it. There's a thing called reverse dollar cost averaging. That happens if you're selling shares. Dollar cost averaging is when you're putting money in, when the market goes down, right? You actually make more money because you're buying shares cheaper, just like over the last 20, 30, 40 years when you've been putting money in your 401k. Well, reverse dollar cost averaging is the exact opposite of that. And that means that when you're pulling money out in retirement, but you have to sell shares, when the share price drops, you got to sell more and more shares to get the same amount of income. You just can't stop when the market's up or stop when the market goes down. You're always constantly selling shares. So when the market's down, you're selling shares. And here's the point. If you're in a fixed income type of a portfolio, and this even includes dividend paying stocks, by the way. So this isn't giving up on the market at all. Creating dividends and interest, it's creating income all the time, whether it's up, if it's down. And I use this analogy and people get this. They kind of question everything I said. They're like, hey, I don't understand whether it's going up or down. How do you get the same income? Understand this. It's a great way to create income. Think of your IRAs, your 401ks as like investment property, right? Real estate. You rent it out. You go buy a $1 million house. You want to get income out of it. So you rent it out for $50,000 a year, net of all your expenses. So after you pay the property taxes and that, you get to keep $50,000. That's a great way to get income, passive income, right? You're going to have to deal with tenants and toilets and stuff like that. But you rent it out, you take your $1 million. It's like a rental house. You're getting $50,000 of cash flow because that's all you really wanted. So there's another way that that could work to create income. And I'm serious. And this is how Wall Street does it. Now, it's kind of a crazy analogy, but I love to use this because it's what spending principal does and how brokers and advisors don't get this. You could take that house and you're like, hey, I need a little bit of money. So you start pulling shingles off, right? And then the next month you take some windows out. Then you take off a door. You peel up a little bit of the carpet, right? You put it on eBay or something like that. You start selling parts of the house, part by part by part by part. You can get the $50,000 a year just selling parts of the house. And actually in this environment, you probably do pretty well, right? Now, there's going to come a point in time that that house isn't even worth half of where it started with because you're basically destroying it, right? You're selling off bits and pieces of it. It isn't going to take long for those raccoons to start digging into it, right? The moral of the story is either way, you could create income. So if you were getting consistent rent or cash flow from the property, or you're just selling off bit by bit. But why on earth would you do it the second way, bit by bit? And that is literally what most advisors have you do when you're pulling income from your portfolio and they have you selling shares. That share no longer exists. It'll not ever create income for you again. It won't grow again, which is why in an environment like we're in now, fixed income can be created. It's because they don't know how. They're growth-based stock market only advisors, right? In my book, Purpose-Based Investing, my first of the two books I wrote, I said they're stock market cheerleaders, right? With little pom-poms going rah, rah, rah. So don't get me wrong. They're fantastic when you were just trying to grow the money from 25 to 60. You're not there anymore. You're at a different point in your life. You're at a time frame when you need to protect what you have. You need to pay least amount of taxes legally that you possibly can. And you want to make sure you get the income you need to last as long as you take your last breath and leave the legacy that you want, right? Where you are now and where you were 5, 10, 20 years ago are no longer the same thing, but they're managing your money that way. So one of the things that I like to look at it when we talk about treating your investments almost like rental property. Instead of selling it off piece by piece, right? Let's say you have that same amount of income or that $1 million portfolio, and it's generating $50,000 a year of cash flow for you. So you could spend that almost $4,000 a month-ish of just cash flow in your pocket that you can spend. If you go on to Zillow and it says it's worth $1,000,001, so it's up 10%, do you care? No, you're not going to sell it for the $1,000,001. Why? Because you want the $50,000 of cash flow. Let's say like last year, you go on to Zillow, you look at it, it's worth $900,000. It's down 10%, but it's still cash flowing $50,000 and you still own the same home. You didn't sell any principal, right? Are you going to sell it or panic because it's down 10%? No. Why? Because you want the cash flow. That is investing for income. So let's do a brief recap here. We're talking about the 10 questions today that should be discussed between you and your current or potential advisor, six of which you should ask, four the advisor should already be asking you. So we talked about three of the six you should be asking the advisor already. Number one, what ways are you pivoting to take advantage of the current interest rate environment? Number two, which isn't really a question, kind of more of a point, don't focus too much on fees. I think you just go to the website, pull up their number. Number three, how do you create income in a portfolio? That's probably the most important question of all the ones you're going to hear on today's show. How do you create income in a portfolio? Show me in black and white where my income is going to come from interest and dividends, not just hoping that arbitrarily it's going to grow to the sky. Because if their answer is, oh, we'll just sell off a little bit of shares so they grow over time, run, don't walk. Look, if you want to know, hey, does this make sense for me? Or I'm interested in this, but I don't know really what to do right now or how I should do it. That's where we come in. We've done this for, again, thousands in the Chicagoland area. We've been doing this for 15 years as an independent fiduciary financial planning firm here. I personally have been doing it for 23 years. All we do is eat, sleep, live, breathe, retirement, income planning. There's a lot of nuances about how you pull money out, how you live off of it forever. First, maybe doing different types of what advisors and different types of specialties that grow their money. Not everybody's situation is the same. We make different recommendations all the time. You don't want some blanket advice, some cookie cutter portfolio, and have it be the wrong advice for your situation. There is zero cost, zero obligation to do anything on a long-term basis. We're happy to help. Set up a 15-minute strategy call. Let's get your questions answered. See if it makes sense to meet. If it doesn't, at least you're getting your questions answered. If it does, maybe we can add some value to what you're looking for. Our number is 866-316-0822. That's 866-316-0822. Or you can always go to the website, crystallaketax.com. Look us up there. Today, we're talking about the 10 questions to ask your current or prospective advisor. We'll be right back after the break.
When it comes to proper estate planning, there are really only two outcomes. You can leave a legacy or you can leave a mess. Which one do you want to leave behind? It's important you understand how even the most generous plans for your assets you intended to bequeath can be undone by probate, taxes, legal snags, healthcare costs, and other avoidable pitfalls.
Join Michael Stewart of Crystal Lake Tax for a live in-person workshop on estate planning Tuesday, September 26th, 6:30 p.m. at Lake in the Hills Village Hall.
Call 866-316-0822. That's 866-316-0822. Protect your estate against excessive taxes. Spare loved ones the cost and headache of probate. And avoid the most common estate planning mistakes.
Again, Tuesday, September 26th, 6:30 p.m. at Lake in the Hills Village Hall.
Call 866-316-0822. That's 866-316-0822. Or visit us online at crystallaketax.com. You can leave a legacy or you can leave a mess. Which one do you want to leave behind? Time now for the Retirement Success Blueprint with Michael Stewart, brought to you by Crystal Lake Tax and Financial.
Your radio is set for the Retirement Success Blueprint. I am your host, Michael Stewart, fiduciary financial planner with Crystal Lake Tax and Financial. And today we're talking about the 10 questions that should be discussed between you and your current or prospective advisor, six of which you should ask them, four of which they should be asking you. So we talked before the break about three of the six. We're going to get into the other three and the first three. One was, what ways are you pivoting to take advantage of the current interest rate environment? Number two, and I wouldn't focus on fees, but it's a question you could ask. You can also go to their website, pull up their ADV form. The third question, which I think is the most important on today's show, is how do you create income? So you're going to ask the advisor, how do you create income in your portfolio? And it better not be, well, we let it grow and then we sell shares, because that's how you run out of money, folks. It needs to be a cash flowing portfolio. Now, question number four is, what is your process in researching holdings? Again, it's one of those questions you just ask, you sit and you wait, because I'm going to tell you what you're going to find. Most of the time, they don't research holdings. They just buy a fund, a mutual fund, an ETF, and it keeps them from having to do the research. Now, here's the problem. You're never going to get fixed income portfolio in that way. You could have stayed in your 401k, back to the fees. You could have saved a lot of money staying in the 401k and done the same thing if all they're going to do is throw you in a bunch of funds. I'm a fiduciary financial advisor, but if I were hiring a financial advisor, I'd want to get something more than the fee for what I could do on my own. At Crystal Lake Tax and Financial, we not only handle the investment management, we use individual securities, so there's little to no other internal costs other than our advisory fee, but we also do proactive tax planning. We assist you with the estate planning. We do tax preparation, all of that built into the relationship. So you're getting more for the fee. It's going in, it's all under one roof. And I don't think that's a strange thing to ask. I think that's true with anything. If I'm going to pay somebody, I'd like to get something more than what I could get on my own. I got people upstairs literally right now doing woodworking in our house because, shoot, I can't even pound a nail without bending it. So I definitely can't do that on my own. But if they're going to put you in, and I've seen this, I've seen people come through my office with millions of dollars, some of the biggest firms in the city, and literally five accounts, and every single one of them has got the same six exchange-traded funds in it, exactly the same. And I'm like, a computer's doing this. Why are you paying somebody 1.5% to manage this when it's actually being managed by some algorithm, some cookie cutter portfolio? I would want to know, what's the process? Do they use a Bloomberg terminal? Do they have an analyst? How many analysts do they have? Are they fixed income analysts? Are they growth equity analysts? What's the process they go through? I would want to know that. We're on a question number five that you should ask your advisor. So now number five is your management done in-house? Or is it outsourced to a third party? So a very good question, because that's kind of like, do you really know what's going on in your portfolio? A newsflash of what's going on in the kitchen with financial advising today, many, many, many firms farm it out to a third party. The reason is because they've got management of employees, they've got bills to pay, they got 401ks to manage, they got health insurance, HR, they got employees not showing up, they got employees quitting, they got all this stuff going on about running their own business. And guess what's another whole business in itself? Managing assets. It's not an easy task. However, if I'm paying 1% that I don't have to pay, I'd like to know what you're going to do that I can't get on my own at Vanguard basically for free. I'm going to recap those six questions to ask your advisor. Again, I know I'm going through this stuff a little quick. This will be on the website, crystallaketax.com. You can re-listen to it as many times as you want. Number one, what are you doing to pivot to take advantage of the current interest rate environment? Number two, ask about fees. Number three, how do you create income in your portfolio, hint, hint, without selling any shares? Number four, what is your process in researching your holdings? Number five, is your management done in-house or by a third party? Now, the final sixth question to ask your advisor is, what conservative moves have you made in light of the current inverted yield curve? You heard me talk about this again and again. If you haven't, go to crystallaketax.com, listen to the past shows. You can hear shows on the inverted yield curve, the whole status, what's going on. Here's the deal. If today you buy a treasury bond, so a government bond, 10-year, you're going to make about 4%. If you buy a 1-year, you're going to make about 5%. That's not the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be the other way around, right? Longer-term rates are supposed to be more than shorter-term rates, right? So if you loan me money for a year, then I'll pay you a certain interest rate. But if I get to loan you the money for 10 years, I would earn a lot more interest, right? Because there's more risk on my part. That's a healthy yield curve. What an inverted yield curve is when short-term rates are higher than long-term rates. And it's usually a precipitate of slowing economy, a potential recession ahead, a lot of things like that. We're approaching about 15 months that we've had an inverted yield curve. And usually within a few months of that, bad things happen. So it's been as inverted as it's been in 40 years. So every single time in 40 years, we've had an inverted yield curve, except for one time, we've had a recession shortly thereafter. So in light of that, in light of all the other economic news out there, in light of 7 of 10 economists talking about an impending recession in 2024, let's go back to the question. What is your advisor conservatively doing to offset that risk? I don't want to know that. I'm going to repeat these one more time before we go to the next segment. We're talking about the 10 questions you should be asking your current advisor or prospective advisor. 6 questions for you to ask. I'm repeating them again. What ways are you pivoting to take advantage of the current high interest rate environment? 2, talk about fees. What kind of fees they charge? 3, how do you create income in your portfolio without having to sell a single share of your principal? 4, what is your process in researching your holdings other than just throwing it in a mutual fund? 5, is your management done in-house or by a third party? So do you know what's going on with the cooks in the kitchen? And then finally, 6 is what conservative moves have you made in light of the current inverted yield curve scenario and the flashing lights of a slowing economy and a potential recession when the calendar flips? Those are some great questions to ask. I think now you won't necessarily go in and say, hey, give me 3 references, right? Because again, as we talked about earlier in the show, what are they going to do? They're going to refer you to their mother and uncle and their father, right? 3 people that actually have to like them. So you're going to get 3 references. They're going to say great things. Again, I'm being a little facetious, but I know why people ask this is because they don't know what else to ask. So that's why I'm trying in today's show to give you some of the information, some of the inside baseball that I think is really going to help you out. And again, if you want to get some other information, I think it'd be very helpful to you. We put together what we like to refer to as our retirement success toolkit. So as long as you're not driving right now, jot this down. A retirement success toolkit. It's got a copy of my 2nd book, Retirement Success Blueprint, How to Build the Retirement You Deserve. It talks about getting income from your portfolio. It talks about saving taxes in retirement. It talks about estate planning. A white paper titled, Are You Paying Too Much Taxes in Retirement? Taxes are going to be your 2nd biggest expense in retirement, so how do you manage those? And 11 signs you're working with the wrong advisor. So to get the Retirement Success Toolkit free of charge, we'll even pay for the postage. Give us a call. Let us know. We want the Retirement Success Toolkit, 866-316-0822. Again, 866-316-0822. Or ask for it at crystallaketax.com. Love to get it out to you. No cost, no obligation. It's our retirement success toolkit. Got a lot of things in it because retirement's important. You need more than one thing. 866-316-0822. So today we're talking about the 10 questions that should be discussed between you and your advisor. And we just covered the 6 that you should be asking your advisor. And I'm going to get into the 4 that the advisor should be asking you. 1, which is technically 7, right? The advisor should be asking you first and foremost, what's your tolerance and capacity for risk? Tolerance is how much are you comfortable with? Capacity is how much can you afford to take? So what is your tolerance and capacity for risk? Are you aggressive? Are you conservative? They should be asking you that, not just insinuating based on your age or a balance or an income need. 2, very, very important, and I think this skipped in many cases. What's the purpose of the money? What are your main goals with this specific money? It's amazing to me how many people don't get asked that or don't even think through that. Oh, I don't know. I guess it's just savings. I guess it's for retirement. No, but what's the purpose of it? Is it for performance? Is it for income? Is it to leave a legacy? So 1, what is your risk tolerance and capacity for risk? 2, what are your main goals with this money? 3, do you want to leave your money to your children? I mean, if you want to spend it all, it's one thing. If you want to leave money to your kids, leave a legacy, the church, somebody, that's another thing. It's amazing how many times those questions don't come up. When I ask them, sitting in front of potentially new clients or we're going through our retirement success blueprint planning process, it is amazing how many times that, especially it's usually the wife, and if it's, there's a couple in front of us and they get this look on her face like, nobody's ever asked us these kind of questions. Why? Because most advisors just want to talk to you about the investments. Your life is more complicated than just investments. It's about leaving a legacy if that's important to you, right? It's about legally paying the least amount of tax. It's about having the estate plan in place. It's about what would be okay if we had a healthcare event and I needed like long-term care. It's about getting income from your investments that you can count on for the rest of your life. That is a true fiduciary financial planner. Those are the kind of questions that you need to ask someone. Not just talk about, hey, you know, look at this chart that only goes from the bottom left to the top right, except for a couple dips along the way. All right, question 4 that the advisor should be asking you. And this, just like I said a minute ago with the 6 questions, you should ask your advisor, what was the most important one? How do you create income in the portfolio without selling principal? This is the most important one the advisor should be asking you of these 4 questions. You ready? How much income do you need? How much income do you need? The advisor should be asking you, how much income do you need? Then what's the question you should ask them? We're going to go back to the six questions. What was the most important one? How do you create income? So if I need $8,000 a month, here's what I need to do to get $8,000 a month. Now, how are you going to create it? This should be a helpful show today to give you a good dialogue with any advisor that you're interviewing. Are you afraid that your portfolio might have too much risk? Well, you're familiar with the market risk, right? Have you heard of credit risk? Have you heard of tax risk? Have you heard of legislative risk? There's a lot of risks out there. And I'm going to talk about all those in just a minute here on the Retirement Success Blueprint. And again, if you want to know, hey, does this make sense for me? Or I'm interested in this, but I don't really know what to do or if right now or how I should do it. That's where we come in at Crystal Lake Tax and Financial. We have done this for, again, thousands in the Chicagoland area. We've got clients in 27 different states. We've been doing this 15 years this year as an independent fiduciary financial planning firm. And I, Michael Stewart, your fiduciary financial planner, have actually been a financial advisor for 23 years. I've seen the good. I've seen the bad. All we do is eat, sleep, live, breathe retirement planning, retirement income planning. There's a lot of nuances about how you get money, how you live off of it forever. Different types of, do you want growth? Do you want income? Some combination of that. Everybody's situation is not the same. We make different recommendations all the time. You don't want to apply some blanket or cookie cutter advice and have it be the wrong advice for your situation. There is zero cost, zero obligation to have a 15-minute strategy call with us. You don't have to do anything on a long-term basis. We're happy to help to set up a 15-minute strategy call. We find out kind of where you are, what you're trying to do, answer your questions. If it makes sense to meet, great, we'll know that. If it doesn't, we're all adults here and we can just part friends. So to get that 15-minute complimentary strategy call, give us a call and say, I'd like a 15-minute strategy call, 866-316-0822. Again, 866-316-0822. Or you can always go to crystallaketax.com. Today, we've been talking about the 10 questions to ask your current or prospective advisor. To the Retirement Success Blueprint, I'm your host, Michael Stewart, fiduciary financial planner with Crystal Lake Tax and Financial. Let's talk about risks, not just a risk, but several risks. And more importantly, not just about those risks, but we're going to talk about how to avoid them. A lot of people think that the only type of risk out there is stock market risk, or at least that's the risk we think of most often when I think of investment risks. In other words, you're 70 years old, you got all your money in the market takes a dive, takes 5-7 years to get back even, creates a lot of problems, a lot of anxiety. You're selling things at a loss to get income. Well, that's one we hear about most because it's the one we understand. It's how companies sell magazine articles, put articles on the internet, clickbait, that you read, things of that nature. It's by far away one of the most things we're familiar with. However, there's several other types of risks, and I don't want you to think I've named them all here, but I'll tell you the most common ones. Of course, you mentioned stock market risk. There's a secondary type of risk called credit risk. Credit risk is the type of risk that we are very, very familiar with at our practice because we do a lot of investments in fixed income. When you get into fixed income, you don't just have market risk to worry about. You also have to worry about credit risk. Credit risk means the same thing as what you're familiar with. You think about if you go get a loan at the bank, there's credit risk. Credit risk for the bank. In other words, you are the credit risk. Right? And the bank's lending you money. If your score 800 plus on your credit score, you've got very little risk. If you're 500, they're probably going to charge you a much higher rate, or they won't even give you the loan because they want to make sure that it gets paid back. That's credit risk. Well, there's a similar risk to that of in fixed income investments. When we buy a bond, a preferred, things of that nature, we got to make sure the company can not only pay when they issue it, but they can continue to pay the interest and dividends. Then you got legislative risk. Legislative risk, of course, is the government when they make a new rule and it affects you and your financial matters. You don't have a lot of say over it. Then, of course, there's tax risk. Tax risk is another risk that we're all facing and going to face as we go further, especially in 2026, as tax rates are expected to rise. Though what they call the TCJA, the Tax Cut Jobs Act, also known as the Trump tax cuts, those sunset or expire January 1st, 2026. So all personal income tax rates go back up. Standard deductions get cut in half. Estate tax limits come back down. It's a lot of things that potentially can move. So taxes are definitely on the rise. How do you avoid it? And then there's a final type of risk called diversification risk. So there's a possibility of being over-diversified, but by far and away, that's such the minority. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it today. The main risk is being under-diversified. I see this when people come in and they get all their money in real estate or all their money in, you know, tech stocks or all in one area. It's hard not to fall prey to this risk, be something that pays off you want to buy more of. Just natural thing, right? It's like recency bias. Because it went up, it's only going to go up. So we're going to talk about all these risks today. I'm going to name them again. Market risk, credit risk, legislative risk, tax risk, and finally, diversification risk. So let's start talking about the most common far and away. It's going to be your stock market risk. So I think one of the reasons that I really believe this, that most people take and have market risk, it's not necessarily because of them. It's because they listen to a well-meaning advisor that doesn't know any better. He was trained in the 90s, maybe in the 80s, right? Saw an uptick in the market. That's when he was born around. So he thinks that the market always going to go up and he just give it enough time. But he's talking to a 65-year-old or a 75-year-old and time isn't necessarily on their side. They need to protect what they have. They need to get income off what they have. They don't care what the market's going to do over the next 30 years, let alone the past 100 years. They don't basically listen to people's temperament, their comfort level with risk. And I think also is the fact that we're trained that way, that the market always goes up. And it does, like I said, but it doesn't every 3 to 5 year spans of time, right? 2000 to 2013, the markets were essentially flat. 2000, the market crashed almost 50%, and NASDAQ was down over 80%. 2007, they got back almost even, crashed again another 50%. And then by 2013, they got back where they were in 2007, which is where they were back in 2000, which is what they call the lost decade. You think, oh, well, Mike, that can't happen. When's the last time that happened? 1968 to 1982, for 14 years, the Dow started at 1,000, it ended at 1,000, right? So for 14 years, how would you have gotten income off your portfolio during that time frame? So typically about 10 out of every 30 years, you're going to have this lost decade of returns, which is why it's important to get cash flow off your portfolio. So when I say market risk, you really have, let me be very clear, and I don't want to talk about the market risk being the same as bankruptcy risk, right? Something's going to fall under for the second type we talked about, that's credit risk. I'm talking about, for instance, you invest in the S&P 500, it's 2007, 2008, and the market drops 50%. We don't have a bankruptcy risk there, right? What's the chance of the S&P 500 going under? It's not going to happen, right? The point is, if you drill down, you got $1 million and you need income, but now you got $500,000, how are you going to get income off of that, right? So the problem is, you need to go back when it's down there, right? It's not a matter of, will the market come back? It will. Will it come back in the time frame where you can do something about it? And if you need to pull income out when it's down, then you're selling more and more shares to generate the same income. And that's the problem with market risk, because market risk isn't the same for all people, right? The market risk is not the same for a 25-year-old who's going to be saving for the next 30 years as it is for the 65-year-old who needs income off their portfolio and for this money to last them the next 25 years. The problem with our industry today is many advisors don't know the difference, and they talk like they're talking to the same person. I can't tell you how many times somebody's walked in and, you know, I won't even mention the firms. If you're 45, 55 years old, you have the same portfolio as a 65 and a 75-year-old. That doesn't make sense for either one of you, but that's all the advisors do is sell you cookie-cutter portfolios. So market risk is very, very present risk. Now, if you're concerned with risk in your portfolio, I think I got something that can help. We've put together what we call our Retirement Success Toolkit. Retirement Success Toolkit, it's got a copy of my recently published book, The Retirement Success Blueprint, a companion report, Are You Paying Too Much Taxes in Retirement?, and 11 Signs You're Working with the Wrong Advisor. So to get your complimentary copy, the toolbox here, the Retirement Success Toolkit, free of charge, we'll even cover the postage. Raise your hand, give us a call, 866-316-0822. Again, 866-316-0822. Or go to crystallaketax.com. Love to get out to you, no cost, no obligation. We'll cover the postage at our expense. Got a lot of things in it because for retirement, you need more than one thing. So touch base with us anytime. So today we're talking about the different risks out there. Talking right now about market risk. Now, I promise you that I also talk about how to solve these different types of risks. Well, the solution to market risk is simply put, invest for income. Now, that doesn't mean it has to be only in bonds and preferreds and real estate, things like that. It could be in dividend paying stocks. If you invest for income in the form of interest and dividends, you can eliminate a lot of the market risk. A second way, and a very good way, is just to diversify. You don't want all your money in the stock market. You don't want all your money in one thing. That's why I talk about investing for income, investing for safety. Heck, in today's market, you can get a really good rate of return on fixed income. There are ways to avoid some of this risk. Now we're talking about a second risk called credit risk. Credit risk is a completely different type of risk than market risk. Market risk is the ups and downs of volatility of the market. Credit risk is truly bankruptcy risk. Credit risk comes into play with every company, but really comes into play when you're dealing with companies that pay dividends and interest, right? So you're a creditor of that company because maybe you bought a bond. So bankruptcy is obviously a problem. There's other companies that the issues they can run into when they run into financial straits. So it's not a matter if they're going to bankrupt. It could just be they stopped paying their dividends, right? You know, their profits went down. You went into a bear market. You went into a recession. So they can't close a factory or fire people. So they just stop paying you. So how long can they run out of cash before they run out of business life? When you get into things like preferreds, we like to use things that they call cumulative preferreds, cumulative dividend preferreds. So it's such that if the company stops paying a dividend, before they can go back and start paying again, they got to pay you back what they owed you. So if they were paying you 6% a year, and then they didn't pay you this year, then they got to pay you 12% for the following year to make up for the 6 they didn't pay. And then they got to pay out those before they can give any income, any dividends to their common stockholders. So don't want to get too far in the weeds, but you know that protects your long-term income. Most people don't even know to check for that. When it comes to credit risk, I'll tell you there's really, in my opinion, one good way to avoid this. True diversification help, but analysis. That's really two things. Analysis, and I call it, for a better word, babysitting. You got to constantly do analysis and keep your finger on the tabs of what's going on. This is why we do with our analysts. We have analysts hired that constantly watch these things, use the correct software, the Bloomberg terminals and so forth, so they can keep an eye on not only does it make sense when you originally buy it and you like the income, but are they still in good financial shape while you own it? That's how you minimize credit risk, right? And so it's not just chasing yields, trying to get the highest meaning thing. It's chasing yields to get the highest paying fixed income that takes the least amount of credit risk while you're in there. So things can change over time, you know, because it is fixed income in that. But ideally, if what you need is income, then that's going to be the key. So if you're asking, hey, does this make sense for me? I'm interested in this, but I don't know what to do or even how to start. That's where we come in at Crystal Lake Tax and Financial. We've done this for thousands in the Chicagoland area. We got clients in 27 different states. We primarily work with those approaching retirement within 5 years of retirement and those already in retirement because we are retirement income specialists. We've been doing this for 15 years as an independent fiduciary financial planning firm. I, as a fiduciary financial planner and owner of the company, have been doing this 23 years. All we do is eat, sleep, live, breathe retirement income planning. There's a lot of nuances. We make different recommendations. We don't believe in a cookie cutter approach. We want to make sure that you don't just get blanket advice and have it be the wrong advice for your specific situation. There is no cost, no obligation to have what we call a 15-minute strategy call. The purpose of that 15-minute call, you've got questions we've got answered. Does it make sense to meet? Can we add value to what you're trying to do? If not, you're going to come away with at least your questions answered. No cost, no obligation to set up a 15-minute complimentary strategy call, 866-316-0822. That's 866-316-0822, or go to crystallaketax.com. You're listening to Retirement Success Blueprint. I'm your host, Michael Stewart, fiduciary financial planner with Crystal Lake Tax and Financial. Right now, we're talking about risks in your portfolio. Earlier in the show, we were talking about the 10 questions to ask your advisor. If you missed any of them, go to crystallaketax.com and catch the show repeat on our media section. It's the Retirement Success Blueprint. I'm your host, Michael Stewart, fiduciary financial planner with Crystal Lake Tax and Financial. And today, we're talking about risks, risks associated with investing, risks and how to avoid them. We talked in the first part of the show about stock market risk. We talked a little bit about credit risk. I'm going to talk to you about legislative risk. Legislative risk is that the government has when they decide to make a change. One of the changes they recently and are talking about right now is something that will affect every retiree, and that's means testing for Social Security. So what does means testing for Social Security mean? Social Security means if you got the means, you got enough assets saved, you got enough income, you may not need Social Security. Now, wouldn't that be something? How many of you remember a guy named Mitch McConnell? Right? Do you remember when he got on public television said that in his opinion, Social Security was an entitlement, as in government's doing you a favor by giving you that? Isn't that something? Yeah, they talked about it. That's also talked about it in the process. They made a change already on affecting irrevocable trusts. Now, I'll tell you, that doesn't affect most people that listen to the show, but the utilization of irrevocable trusts to pass money on tax-free has been an estate planning tool used for decades, and they just recently changed it. Of course, they're constantly talking about making other changes. But here's the thing. How much of this can you really avoid? It's very hard to avoid. One solution is diversify. For instance, they're talking about making Roths not tax-free. Talked about that before. Let me tell you a little bit about legislative risk. You hear them bring up these crazy ideas. You think they'll never make that idea work? Well, let me tell you how the government works. these ideas are brought up. They know full well when they bring up the idea, it's not going through. It's not passing. They plan on bringing it back up later. You ever heard this old saying? I think it's from Rahm Emanuel, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Well, that's what they're waiting for, is a crisis situation. We saw it during COVID. We saw it during the financial crisis, right? That'll match up with the crazy idea that they thought and put on the shelf. Bring back the idea later. But the way to avoid that risk is to diversify. For instance, if you want to make sure your money's really tax-free, there's more than one way to get your money tax-free than just a Roth. So I always talk about tax-free investing. I don't just talk about Roth conversions. Secondly, vote. That's one of the best ways to avoid legislative risk. Make sure the right people get in the right seats. But there's one way to avoid that. Let's talk a little bit about tax risk. Everybody out there is going to have a tax issue. I don't know if you know it or not, but the 2017 tax rules, the Trump tax cuts, are going to sunset or expire January 1st, 2026. But there's several things that are going to happen. Number one, tax brackets are going to go up. Percentages which they tax you are going to go up. Number two, they're going to shrink the brackets. You're going to exit one tax bracket and get into another quicker. Number three, you're going to lose your standard deduction. Standard deduction took 50% of the people that itemized down to only about six. Well, it's going to go back to about 50% itemizing, and you probably won't have enough deductions to offset that standard deduction. You have until 2026 to figure that out. It's one of the reasons I talk about some solutions here. Number one, convert to tax-free investing. Number two, make sure you're getting all the deductions here. So that's tax risk. Now, there's a ton of more stuff, diversification risk and all those things, but I want to leave you with this. At Crystal Lake Tax and Financial, we are wealth managers. What's the difference between a wealth manager and an investment broker? An investment broker talks about your investments, tells you the values went up, but they don't add real value. They just sell you stuff. A wealth manager shows you not only how you should be invested, but structures your portfolio so your income's coming from interest and dividends, not just hope the market goes up. A wealth manager assists you with your estate planning. A wealth manager shows you ways to reduce the impact of a healthcare event and shows you how to legally pay the least amount of taxes with proactive tax planning, potentially saving you hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, in unnecessary and voluntary taxes. At Crystal Lake Tax and Financial, we have fiduciary financial planners, a CPA, a tax team. We work with a legal team all under one roof to coordinate your investments, your taxes, and estates under your roof. You deserve that. Most people just have a broker that sells them stuff. Maybe you've outgrown your broker. What you need now is no longer the same thing they do. They may be a good person, but let's face it. Basic expenses in retirement are taxes, and if your broker doesn't give you tax advice, it might be time to upgrade that relationship. You get a 15-minute complimentary strategy call to see are we a fit. Get your questions answered. Give us a call, 866-316-0822, 866-316-0822. Go to crystallaketax.com. Thanks for joining us this week for the Retirement Success Blueprint. This is your host, Michael Stewart, fiduciary financial planner with Crystal Lake Tax and Financial. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend. If you know someone that could use conservative, income-based financial planning advice, don't keep it a secret. You can always get more information at crystallaketax.com. Until next week, be safe, be humble, and don't settle for anything less than you deserve.
That's all the time we have for today. To speak with Michael off the air, call 866-316-0822. And for more information about how to make the switch to retirement income, visit us online at crystallaketax.com. Michael will be back again next week at this same time for another Retirement Success Blueprint.
Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Crystal Lake Tax and Sound Income Strategies, LLC are not associated entities. Crystal Lake Tax is a franchise of Retirement Income Source, LLC. Retirement Income Source, LLC and Sound Income Strategies, LLC are associated entities.